Life of the Girlfriends.
And we did look really cool in the 60s. We really did.
Yes, you guys did.
Hi,
I wasn't around there yet.
No, you weren't.
Hey, everyone. We're Christine Marie and Julie, and welcome to Life with the Girlfriends, or More Life with the Girlfriends, as Mama likes to say.
Mm-hmm. I'm Christine Marie. You're right. I am the mama.
Yes.
You better not forget it.
So we give you props, Mama. We give you respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
And tonight we're going to have a fascinating show because we're starting right off the bat. We're going to bring in the person we're interviewing on right off the bat.
And we never do this.
No, we usually have a little talk, and we'll probably talk at the end of the show about football because I've got a football story.
Alrighty.
Football Sunday, which is standard in my neighborhood. And we're also going to be talking a lot about our childhood and our childhood experiences and how they keep popping up for clearing a lot of times as adults. Because today we're interviewing Tina Dietz, and she is part of the Unwavering Strength authors that we've been interviewing for the last, a good month and a half. No, it took
honey,
3 months.
I would
Thank
say,
you.
Yeah, since like July.
Thank you. All right. Time flies for me.
Mm-hmm.
Better do what you love to do because time flies, that's for sure. And her story is such thought-provoking. I have tons of questions and emotional-provoking. My soul was just like lit up because she talked about a time in her life when she was being bullied. And I'll let her tell the story. But then this led us on this huge journey of all the times that's happened to us and how, my gosh, we still feel it. You know, even
it's
though
so
we,
true.
Even though you're a therapist, Mom, and you know, I do my work, and I work with children,
and you were a teacher,
yeah, and I worked with children, and I know about bullying, and yet that ugly head came up, and I'm like, oh wow, it still hurts. So I want to bring Tina on now.
Yes,
Tina, are you there, sweetie?
No. Made me want to get on some go-go boots.
Yes. There you go. Isn't that music wonderful?
That's awesome.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm a yeah, girl, baby. And Tina, I hope you don't mind me calling you sweetheart, but after I read your story, I felt like I just knew you.
Oh, that's great.
And so I'm going to, first off, I want to talk about your lifestyle because you've got a pretty awesome business model, and you're a fourth-generation entrepreneur, you're a therapist, and you want to help 10,000 people realize their business dreams and goals and what their perfect day looks like. So I want to get to that, but I want to get to that after we touch the unwavering strength real quick.
Yeah.
So tell me why did you decide to write about this story, the time when you were bullied? And, you know, tell us a little about that.
Well, it's kind of funny. The publisher and I happened to run into each other quite literally. We ended up on a phone call together through total happenstance. And she shared on this call that all about the book and what was happening, but there was one topic she couldn't get anyone to write about. And no one wanted to discuss it. And it was childhood bullying. And my ears just perked up and I said, well, I would love to share about this experience. We met through business auspices through my, you know, my work as a business coach. But we ended up having a conversation, and I shared with her a little bit about it, and she invited me to be part of the book. So that's really how it came about. It was one of those right time, right place situations. It's a story and a time that I'm always, quite honestly, happy to share about because every time that I do, I have this extraordinary experience. I was just, I did a talk in Toronto a few weeks ago, in Toronto, Canada, and there was about 100 people in the room. And after I did this 10-minute talk about this experience, no less than 20 people in the room came up to me and said, I lived that story, or I lived a version of that story. And the amazing thing also to me was, it was just as many men as it was women.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I believe that.
It was amazing. Yeah.
Well, we were talking about it, and you talk about being insecure. Can I tell you about your story? Would that be okay?
Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah.
I'd love to hear
what you got out of it. I'm always interested to hear what stands out for people.
Mom's always like, Julie, you end up telling people their own story. And I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. Tell me my story.
Let's hear it.
But you go into the beginning of second grade. and how really you felt like you were that one kid that was picked on the most. And you mentioned the perpetrator's name, your foe in some sense. And the story starts there, really, how he just was relentless. And you end up, you know, finding the tallest place in the playground, and you never were able to, you know, find safety with your teachers, which is a common theme, I think, because I was talking to my mom, and she had a year when she was really bullied as well, and found no solace in the teachers. And then you go and you have this. You were also one of the, you know, you're the smartest kid in the class, and you know, smart, and everybody's like, well, you know, the kids will catch up to you, and so forth. But then you have this breakdown on your birthday in front of the whole class that seemed to turn the tide. Can you talk about that breakthrough, that breakdown, or that breakthrough?
Yeah. Well, my birthday's in May, so I had been through this entire year in school where I was separated a lot from my class, and you know, I'll be the first person to admit, you know, I was not your kind of average everyday kid. You know, I used 50-cent words when I talked. I was used to being around adults, and I had done something not quite sure what. Actually, he doesn't even remember what it was who had bullied me, because I actually have spoken to him as an adult, which I also talk about in the story. What kind of triggered this whole thing where they developed this army against me, and we didn't have cooties, we had Tina germs in the class, and I was just, but I was separated academically a lot from the class in my kind of own group. And so this whole year went by, you know, physical things happening and emotional things happening and being very isolated. But then on my birthday, coming up to the front of the classroom after having passed out the cupcakes that I made for everyone, and the teacher starting to sing and the entire class being silent, nobody singing happy birthday. Mm-hmm. And just I fell apart at that time. It was that moment where you feel like something snapped inside of you. And that was the moment where everything kind of came out of me in choking and sobbing, and the teacher and the class and everything just kind of came to a standstill. And I don't remember exactly what the teacher said, but it was a 90-second conversation between the teacher, the boy who had been the ringleader, and the classroom. Teacher didn't know. That nobody got sent to the principal's office. There were no further consequences for anyone. But it did all stop. And basically the gist of what the teacher said to the boy was, look at what you've caused. Mm-hmm. You don't treat people this way. And that was it.
Wow.
And it was a really seminal moment for me. Not only that the bullying stopped, but also it really, I learned later how much it shaped my view of authority and also my view of the, you know, at that point when you're 8 years old and you break down in front of a classroom, that's kind of like the worst thing you can imagine.
Oh,
you know,
exactly.
What is it they say about fear of public speaking is only the same or as the people's fear of death, right? There's been research done on that. So when you completely dissolve as a child in front of a classroom, there's really nowhere left to go when you're that mm-hmm. age. So it gave me this strange kind of boldness from there on in, where I somehow found, you know, the title of the book is Unwavering Strength, this sense of unwavering strength where I just kept going for it because I had already had, you know, some of my worst fears realized.
Yes, absolutely. Do you think he never realized what he was doing, that he had not made the connection at that age, his actions were causing you direct pain?
I do think that there was a distancing there from the situation, because children are so in their own world, you know, especially at that age, 7, 8 years old, you're really just coming into the ability of abstract thinking at all. So that is really where a lot of empathy training nowadays, when we talk about empathy training or empathy education, that is actually a great age to have that happen, because of this developmental, I'm switching the therapist mode here, where this happens developmentally for children, to be able to say, I feel this way, does that person feel that way? And to be able to make those, you know, connections between the two, which is one of the reasons it's such a tricky age, that those ages between about 5 and 8. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
I totally agree.
I don't think you realize the extent, no.
Yeah. I remember teaching that age and just being surprised how kids never really realized the pain they were causing each other. And they just needed to, and then once they got hurt themselves, they changed a little bit. It was, but you almost hoped that they got there faster so that they were causing less pain. So that once that realization happened, they're like, oh, thank God it happened now. And now I can behave differently.
But at least you have, there's education now. When I was growing up, I was like the new kid in the classroom. And there were a couple boys that just were relentless. And I mean, there was, they would follow me home and throw rocks and mud. And I remember my begging my mom to talk to the nuns, and all they said was, oh, I'm sure it's because they got a crush on her. And I was like, that was
yes, because that's helpful. Yes.
It was like, and I felt brutalized, you know. I mean, it was, and that was it. That was the extent of, you know, any education. It was crazy back then.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit like a pendulum, you know. Now we have, you know, we're still dealing with then zero tolerance, which gets kind of nutso in some areas, and then but we also then have all these instances of children and teenagers committing suicide because of unrelenting bullying that's happening.
Yes.
So it's a very strange mishmash of what's going on, you know, right now, and I think many parents and many communities trying to find their footing in the best way to tackle these really important issues.
Right. You make a good point because it is a pendulum, and we don't want to swing the other way where we all feel victimized. And then we also don't want to not take into consideration the fact that there's now so many other ways that people can have these, you know, bullying episodes that take some, you know, through the online experience or social media. And And with kids growing up nowadays, you can't run away fast enough. I mean, you can't hide. You can't, you just got to figure out a way to live with it. And more education, more real, you know, everybody being just totally honest about it, maybe we can evolve faster beyond this. But,
Jill, I'm just thinking, you know, Tina, we're here in Illinois, and I'm just remembering a story from a couple of months ago up in Wisconsin, just a state north to us, where I think that there were these two girls who had decided to take, well, there was actually her friend, and they took her out into the woods, and they decided to, I think, kill her. They didn't. She lived. But it was, I think it was something about social media, too, that they didn't like. Do you remember that at all, Julie?
No, I don't.
Oh, God. It's just, I just think about the brutality of it, you know, and kids are going through today.
And, Tina, how, as a therapist and as somebody who's gone through this and really have done lots of work around this, personal healing, because in your story you talk about really being determined that you are responsible how you're going to react to this. And you're responsible for your healing, which I really loved in your story. Your story is a story about healing. A couple things. You talk about a party that you threw when you were 27, 28 years old. And it was kind of, tell me a little about that party, because it's a really good point of your story.
Yeah, it was it's an interesting situation. I had gone to graduate school to become a therapist, and I was working in the schools. And when I started working with children, something I certainly did not expect to happen was a lot of things from my own experience as a child kind of came bubbling up to the surface. And especially since I was working with children who were not just at risk, but really in very difficult situations, which is where I started my career. And I ended up because I'm very much a believer in constantly, you know, developing yourself. You know, it's all we can do is develop ourselves, right? And I had been ended up in treatment for some post-traumatic stress, and I had gotten to a point in that process with my own therapist where I had come to this place of grace and forgiveness for things that had happened in my past, particularly with school and also outside of school. And I was, you know, those restaurants and you put your business card in a fishbowl and they pull it out and they give you like a cocktail party?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that is kind of what I had gotten one of those. And my therapist said, why don't you, don't tell people this, but, you know, you've got all these people around you that you're still in touch with. And the boy who had been the ringleader in second grade had married one of my best friends. He turned out to be okay. He really did. We grew up in a small town, and it was just one of those things. And she had actually come to me before her wedding and said, you know, I know you and he had some issues. I'm like, sweetie, we were in second grade.
Right.
Yes, it left a mark, and we were eight.
Right.
I mean, there's a separation there.
Right.
Between the adult and the child, and I knew he wasn't a bad person. There was no evil in him.
Right.
But they were totally unaware of any of these processes I was going through. So I had this cocktail party. We had a great time. People from my past, people from my present, and it was just it was an amazing thing. But toward the end of the party, the man who as the boy had been the ringleader in second grade pressed an envelope into my hand and said, read this later. And it was this 4-page apology letter for second grade.
Wow.
And I had already forgiven them.
Right.
But it was like this last little piece just kind of clicked into place.
Mm.
And when I read his letter, what stood out for me most in the letter was something that he wrote that he said, you know, please don't tell my wife. Essentially what he said is, please don't tell my wife about this. She really thinks I'm a good person.
Aww.
So there was an element where he had not forgiven himself.
Exactly.
But what he didn't know was that she already knew.
Yeah.
She already knew all this about him. She married him anyway. So there was this unspoken piece between them that was never bridged. And I desperately wanted to have that conversation with him. And I did, make a phone call, kind of reach out to him a little bit, and mm-hmm. he didn't respond. And I said, you know what, I'm just gonna let it lie.
Right.
I would love, I hope that at some point they did have that conversation and did get to bridge that unspoken communication.
Wow, that is interesting.
Did he ever mention the letter why he did it? Did he ever say why? Or did
no,
he was
and I don't think he knew.
Yeah,
I really don't think he knew. I think at the time, and you know, having children of my own, even having children that age, I could very easily see where something that could spiral out of control.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And also, you know, we don't realize at that age, or even as adults, we do not realize the power that we have. That when you start planting a seed in one area, you can't predict how it's going to grow.
Mm.
You know, he probably didn't even know that him teasing me was, him bullying me was resulting in creating a culture in the classroom of violence.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, in a workplace, you'd call it a hostile environment.
Yes.
So, and that's where, you know, when I talk about Viktor Frankl's work in the chapter and this whole idea of choosing how we respond is the last of human freedoms.
Yes.
And it's, you know, I'm on a soapbox now, but, you know, even on social media and things like that, being responsible for the impact of what comes out of your face and your actions. Is, you know, people say, oh, well, I'm just so-and-so. I'm just doing such-and-such. Well, no. Mm-hmm. Yes. Your words reach hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people. Mm-hmm. So it's not watch what you say, it's be responsible for the impact.
Yes.
We interviewed, I can't think of his first name,
Robert McDowell.
Thank you. Robert McDowell last weekend, and another author from Unwavering Strength. And just, it was weird because Christy and I had been talking about this before we interviewed him, and then he brought it up just out of the clear blue sky, saying, we never know who we can help in a positive way. And if we just realize that everybody we meet is a chance that we can affect them in a positive way, we all would act better or be kinder.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think we'd forget, too, how sometimes our attitudes affect people in a negative way. And we don't realize that seed that we're planting in them takes off in a different route.
But Tina, when I was a kid, I just couldn't even fathom being mean or cruel to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't even consider it. Were you the same way?
Yeah, and it's funny. I think a lot of it has to do with just, about 50 to 60% of personality is genetic, which I did not believe truly until I had children.
Mm-hmm.
and saw it in my own kids from, birth, basically. And so, for example, my son is very much like me. My daughter is very much like my husband in terms of our attitudes and mentality. Obviously, that's not a hard and fast rule, but as a generality, my son cannot fathom of doing something like cutting it a line or, being mean to somebody. And it's just completely, it doesn't even exist in his brain at all.
Right.
My daughter, however, when we were living in the United States and she was in kindergarten, her and a couple of her girlfriends on our street, we didn't even know where it came from. Me and several of the moms, we all had a bunch of girls who used to hang out together, and they ended up in these like knockdown, drag out fights, and we were trying to figure out what in the world is going on here. And it just seemed to come out of nowhere. It was very much kind of this, almost like a pack mentality thing that emerged. But my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law both came to me and said, I'm really sorry I was like that. I was like that too.
Really?
But my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law are like two of the kindest, hardest working, most generous, delightful human beings on the face of the planet. So it's just, there's these strange developmental phases that we go through,
Yeah.
And as the adults get smarter and able to see these clues early on, they can probably stop or direct it in different ways, or at least not,
Exactly.
Brush it out.
Exactly, yeah. And
they'll grow out of it.
And me and the other moms on the street did just that, and that's, we implemented a, no more than two girls in a room together at the same time for about a month until things died down.
Right.
And then it all evened out. And then it all evened out. It was one of those things.
I was listening to this one doctor who was talking about children and kids, and he said truly the cruelest person in the world is a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
Because all about them, and they will fight you to the nail, and thank God they're little, or we'd be in big trouble as a society.
We'd be in big trouble.
so gratefully, we grow out of these stages, and gratefully we have parents like you who are willing to see it as what it is.
Well, and also, I just want to thank you for the courage that it took to do your work and to stay in the field and to keep, tilling the soil and the fact that after you got that 4-page letter from the perpetrator, and to be able to see while you're healed and healing, that he hadn't done that work yet.
He was in his own process. He was in his own process.
Yes,
absolutely.
Tina, what I want to do right now, I want to say thank you for writing that story. And interesting. I'm so glad it was your story that got written about bullying, because it has so many different layers.
Yes.
And
yes.
Seeing the pain it causes in everybody's life and how that comes up. And I know Mom and I will probably talk about this in the next half hour of our stories. But I do want to share with the audience what you do now. And, you know, you talk about yourself being a fourth-generation entrepreneur. And you talk about your parents. You never say exactly what they did, so I'm going to ask you, because you lived above the business. So what
yes.
did you guys do when you were growing up?
My parents owned, it's not very glamorous, my parents owned a wood-burning stove and fireplace shop, and the business was downstairs, and mm-hmm. we lived upstairs. So I started answering phones when I was about 4 and a half, and I started going to trade shows when I was 6. And it was always just a part of life. Growing up. And it's interesting, I never wanted to own my own business, because to me, the business was like, I was in competition with the business. I'm an only child. And, you know, I was always, fighting for my parents' time, because most
right.
entrepreneurs, they work 24/7.
Right.
And, but I didn't realize until I got out into the working world how much had been ingrained in me. And so every time I took a job, I ended up, you know, just kind of naturally wanting to kind of run the place, or starting something new, or reinventing, or seeing all the holes that needed to be fixed, and all that kind of thing. So
right.
over time, it really led me back to owning my own business, and I've owned a number of them. So,
and so what you want to help 10,000 business owners get to their goals.
Yay.
Talk about yay.
Yay.
I can't
yay.
For that.
Yes.
And you talk about your perfect day that you live, and you want to help other entrepreneurs live that way as well. So
yeah.
I'm going to ask you this big question, because if you're going to create a perfect day every day, I'm living on. I might be on vacation permanently. I don't know. And is that possible?
So,
can I do that?
Is it possible to live a perfect day every day? You know, when I talk about the perfect day, the perfect day is a tool. It's actually a tool that I do with people mm-hmm. that is as much a neurological exercise as it is a visualization. And why I work with business people in particular, there's a couple of reasons. One is that small business owners really do run the world's economy. If you just look at the numbers worldwide, it is small business owners that employ most of the people on this planet, that really drive the economy, and they're the engine of this entire planet. So that's one reason. The second reason is that obviously it's near and dear to my heart, coming from that background of small business and entrepreneurialism. But thirdly, people who own small businesses own them because they want a better life, mm-hmm. because they want to call their own shots, because they want to have their destiny be in their hands.
Yes.
And that means that they're willing to take a risk. And those are the people who, if they go out and they really go for it, and they say, okay, I'm going to run a business, but this business isn't just going to generate my livelihood, but it's also going to give me the lifestyle I really want. And that's really where I work with folks, is to have their businesses run so that it not just serves their pocketbook, that's important, but it also serves their lifestyle.
Mm.
So you want to increase your income, but you also want to increase your free time at the same time. And most people, because they're so indoctrinated into this nose to the grindstone 60 to 80 hours a week, almighty dollar mentality,
yes.
they don't see that they can have it all and that they can do both at the same time.
Mm.
And that's what's really so important. Now, and most entrepreneurs, they don't do things they hate.
Right.
So,
right.
We find satisfaction in our work, right?
Right.
There's sometimes something, you almost would rather work with a client and have the client have a breakthrough. And then, come home in the spirit of celebration and, like, let's go out to dinner. Taking the family out to dinner, I had this fantastic day. And, entrepreneurs bring that home to their families. I
you
want
bet.
Them to bring more of that home to their families so that their kids grow up knowing. We say to kids, you can be anything you want to be. Do what you love and the money will follow. You know, my underlying mission in the 10,000 Thriving Businesses is really so that when we tell kids, do what you love and the money will follow, we are an example of that, and we're telling them the truth.
Yes, absolutely. And so you're living in Costa Rica right now. What made you decide to take that jump? That's a pretty big jump.
You know, it was a big jump, but it didn't feel like a huge jump because it wasn't abrupt. It wasn't something that we just pulled out of our hat. It was something that percolated over time. I do a lot of these five-year strategic vision plans with my clients and in our own for our family. Now, this is going back, it'll be 4 years now. We had said we wanted to try having a mobile lifestyle, that we wanted to, you know, do the kind of the four-hour work week kind of life. And by the way, Tim Ferriss works way more than 4 hours a week, but, you know, it's a good book title.
That's what we say, too, about him.
Yeah, it's a great book title. And I love the book. The book is completely awesome, but it is funny. It's like, you know, it sure as heck made me pull it down off the shelf. But so we were, you know, 3 years into a five-year plan, and we had gotten used to this idea that, yes, we're going to live this mobile lifestyle. And Costa Rica was where we had thought we would start because of its infrastructure and safety level and lifestyle. And I had some contacts down there from some other collaborations and things like that. But it was just sitting in the background. We were in the process of selling our home. My husband works remotely for a corporation. And he got a call the one day that they said, well, we changed one of the rules. You no longer have to be within a two-hour driving distance of a corporate center. You're fully remote now. So we looked at each other and said, you want to do the Costa Rica thing instead of move to a different town? Because we were already in the process of selling our home.
Wow.
And we said, yes. I made a phone call. An hour later, I was looking at condos and talking to schools in Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
He was already in the background. And that's why it's so powerful to have these kind of perfect day kinds of plans, because they seem like a fantasy until everything comes together, and then all of a sudden you find that you've been collecting resources for a while and may not have even realized it.
Yes. Oh, that's a good point.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I know that one of my favorite, when I watch House Hunters International on HGTV, I love when they go to Costa Rica. I'm just fascinated by the mountains and the they're famous for coffee beans, right?
Yes, I was not a daily coffee drinker until I came to Costa Rica. It's just one of those things. Yeah, there's
now
nothing like it.
You're living close to the equator, so it gets dark around 5:30. Is it 12 hours of light, 12 hours of dark, basically all year
pretty
round?
Pretty much. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty much all year round. So it gets light about 5:30 in the morning, gets dark about 5:30 at night. It's a different pace of life. Something that's been really remarkable to us is when we come back to the United States, because, you know, we're back and forth, and we really are vagabonding right now. You know, we're in Costa Rica, we're in Florida, we're in New York. We have some potential plans to visit Bali or New Zealand next year. That's possibly
Bali.
In the works. We'll see.
Yeah.
And it's very cool having this level of freedom. It does also bring a whole other set of things to manage with it, but again, when you're doing something that you really enjoy, you just work with that. You just go for it, and you just decide what you're going to do. But, you know, when we come back to the United States, what we find ourselves overwhelmed by is the amount of choices. It's this sheer mass of abundance of being in North America where, you know, I'll take the bus into town because we don't even have a car, don't need it. And I'll take the bus in the town, and I'll be walking around the town square, and, you know, I have plenty of choices, but there's not 10 different kinds of peanut butter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I found myself staring at the peanut butter when I went back to the United States saying, my goodness, there's 10 different kinds of peanut butter. And we spend so much energy on these tiny little choices, and we never realize it until all of a sudden there's only one kind of peanut butter in front of you, and the only choice is peanut butter or no peanut butter.
Right. Yes. I'm thinking of Julie.
Why does it take a lot less energy?
Yeah. What'd you say, girl?
No, I was thinking when she said that, though, there was this movie that I saw recently. I think the guy's a soldier, and he comes back home. And he goes into the, and he's going to the grocery store, and he just sees this, all these massive choices. I think at that moment he decides to, you know, re-up.
It was Hurt Locker.
Was it Hurt Locker?
Yes. Yes. I don't know if that's totally appropriate.
It was a first-run movie. But that's exactly how I feel like that. Like, yeah. It would be up on all the choices.
It is. And you're so right, Tina, that our abundance in North America is just wild. And I have to work with clients myself because sometimes I'll have clients that feel such lack that we start going through gratitude and different processes, and all of a sudden it's like, what's going on with me? Why do I feel lack right now, and how do we turn it around? And you can get there. But you talked about living a vagabond lifestyle.
Well, when I read that, Tina, my first thought was, I bet you read The 4-Hour Workweek, because he had that as his original title, Tim Ferriss did. It was like The Vagabond Lifestyle.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, yeah. No, it's a very cool life. Like right now, I'm sitting out on my deck. We're living in the mountains right now. We've also lived at the beach here, and I'm looking at the lights across the valley. We're about 4,500 feet up, so we're high elevation.
Yeah.
And I can see the lights on the other mountain ridge next to me, and the lights of the city of San Jose far, far off in the distance.
Oh.
And I'm surrounded by a coffee field and a bunch of orange trees.
Oh. Yes. Right.
And I even
like
myself.
Famous for their coffee.
It's very cool. But here's an interesting thing. I was having massive internet issues last week, and I was freaking out, of course, because a lot of my business is through the internet.
Sure.
And you know, again, you have a plan B and a plan C when you're living in a second or third world country. So you know, I always have that. But I was up early in the morning, kind of, you know, psyching myself out, trying to calm myself down. And I turned on the TV, we do have cable, and that was working. And there was a Miami network affiliate, and the traffic report was on. So I looked at the traffic report and the bumper-to-bumper traffic in Miami and the concrete. And then I turned my head, and I have this vista of this looking out over this valley.
Yeah.
And the voice in the back of my head went, "Are you so worried about the internet right now?"
love it.
So
I love
get
it
your laptop,
too.
Go walk to the corner, get on the bus, and enjoy your day. You know,
exactly.
Love it.
Exactly. Well, is Costa Rica what? In terms of cost of living, what is it? Can you correlate something in the U.S.?
It really depends on how you want to live. I mean, you can live on almost nothing here. You can live a very expensive lifestyle here. It's anything you want. It's really, there's no, kind of in between. I'm originally from the Buffalo, New York area.
Okay.
Buffalo, New York is known for having a fairly low cost of living in the U.S. High taxes, mm-hmm. but very inexpensive housing and food and things like that. It's very similar to that you kind of want to live, you know, middle of the road. So, but it's different. Cell phones, if you own a cell phone and you bring it down here and it's unlocked, having cell phone service is extremely inexpensive. Internet is generally less expensive. But food, depending on how you eat, if you eat American brands, it's going to be very expensive. If you go to the farmer's market and the farmer's market where I live, there's 250 stalls at the farmer's market.
Oh, wow.
I can feed my family of four from the farmer's market on about $75 a week.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. I adore the farmer's market. But, you know, occasionally do we take the drive into town and go to Costco to pick up that big jar of peanut butter I was talking about? Yes, we do. So it really just kind of depends on, again, on how you want to live. You can find housing for $400 or $500 a month. You can find housing for $3,000 a month and everything in between.
Well, Tina, I just want to say thank you. We've taken more of your time than I told you we were going to take, but you are just so fascinating.
You are.
And I know that you have on your website, you have a bonus that people can go for free.
Oh, sure.
First of all, what's your website?
My website is thisistinadietz.com. So you can find me there, and you can find me all over the social media networks.
Awesome. Under Tina Dietz, or This is Tina Dietz.
is TinaDietz.com, yes.
Perfect. And I also am on your website right now, and I love it because your free ebook and blueprint is Solve Any Problem in 10 Minutes.
Yes, that's so awesome.
And I'm like,
yeah, that's my 4-hour work week title right there.
Exactly. That's it.
What I always want people to know about this, you know, a lot of free downloads, there's a crap load of free downloads out there, right?
Yes.
And most of them are crap. I'll be the first person to admit that. And what I strove to do with this one was to not make it crap. And this is an actual process that I use with my clients. There is an assessment in there, a self-assessment. There's an explanation of the process, and there is a template. This is something that I use with all of my clients. It is a really powerful problem-solving process because, again, we get stuck on little things that suck our energy, and we're used to doing this. But when you can start to clear away those interruptions and those concerns and those upsets that happen on a daily basis, you start to create a lot more velocity and a lot more focus on producing the results you really want to produce. And that's what that ebook is all about.
Wow. Well, I just loved what you said about the 5-year plan even a few minutes ago. I thought that was awesome for, you know, small business owners to, you know, because everybody's just like, you know, just week to week, and how do we, you know, and yet to have that 5-year plan kind of takes a little bit of, I don't know, it feels a little magical. It feels like, hey, we can actually make it, you know, in 5 years.
Exactly. And I'm not a big fan of the real rigid traditional business planning, so I don't tend to do that with my clients unless they're going after some, you know, angel funding or bank funding. The 5-year vision plan is really so that as a human being and as a business owner, you can see the bridge between where you are now and where you want to be.
Yes. Mm, beautiful.
Yeah.
And I know, just my own personal history, I know my parents, when we had family meetings, which was frequently because my mom's a therapist, I'm sure she has a therapist. You have family meetings.
Family meetings. Yes. I'm scheduled for later today, as a matter of fact.
We grew up knowing where we're, as a family, where we're heading. You know, what do we want to do as a family, and how do we support each other and goals and all that stuff. And when I hear that people don't have family meetings, I'm always like, you don't have a family meeting? I thought everybody had a family meeting. So I love the fight. It just gives life a little bit more
juice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like that. It's great. And I just put my email in right now for the 10-minute
solution. Oh, good. Oh, good.
So can't wait. So,
good.
Tina, I want to say thank you.
That.
Oh, thank you so much for being on Life with the Girlfriends tonight. Enjoy your night in Costa Rica.
Yeah, it sounds so awesome.
Thank you.
I want to go.
Come visit.
Enjoy your vagabond life, and thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been wonderful.
Thanks, Tina.
And everybody,
God bless.
You can go to her website. This is TinaDietz.com. And go
get
pick
that
up
free download.
Yes, and also go to the book, Unwavering Strength, at unwaveringstrength.com. You can also get it at Amazon and BarnesandNobles.com. And
Tina, do you know if we made bestseller? Was it an international bestseller?
Oh, yeah. It went international bestseller in 5 countries and growing.
Yay.
Yeah.
That's a big yay. Woohoo! I love it. Congratulations. Congratulations.
I'm going to be
thank
in part
you.
2, guys.
That's right. We
woo-hoo!
Can't wait. Can't wait. And thank you, Tina, again, for putting your story about bullying.
Yeah.
Not everybody wanted to talk about it,
yes.
but it all happened. So.
Absolutely. Thanks
so
much, Tina.
Have a great night.
You too.
Bye-bye. Ah, yay. Mom, what a wonderful interview we had with Tina.
How fast did that go?
And I started feeling a little, like I was just like, oh, she's being so open with us, and I didn't ask permission for her time, but she was cool with it. So
yeah,
I feel great.
Wasn't that sweet? Because I know we usually like to keep it to like 20 minutes or so.
But I had someone to talk to her about, about her lifestyle, that vagabond lifestyle.
Oh, I know, because, you know,
bullying.
I love the, you know, you always want to meet somebody who's, you know, brave and does that stuff. And
who's living the life.
Yeah.
And it came in different ways. I mean, her husband was able to not have to be, what did she call it, like no longer local.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can, mobile.
Right.
And that, but they put the seed out there. Years before.
Right.
That, hey.
Isn't that important, this idea of planting a seed?
Can I share what you've planted a seed with lately that you actualize? Maybe not. I don't know.
What were you going to say?
That little gift you got?
The camper?
Yes. You know, I mean, that was something you've talked about for, I don't know, several years. And it never seemed the right time.
Right.
Or the right camper.
Right.
Or the right hassle. and the life situation could come up to really kind of utilize it, because you've told me exactly what you want it for, weekend getaway.
Right.
Just a little weekend getaway.
Just, yeah, nothing major.
Nothing major.
Mm-mm.
And you did it.
And it was interesting because I look all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and been looking for years, so I know what I focus on, what I really wanted.
Yes.
And I had the price in mind, and it wasn't local. I didn't find it in local. It was New Jersey.
Exactly.
It was in New Jersey, and you came. I called you up. I said, I just bought a camper.
Yes. And I go, what did Dad say? Oh, I haven't told him yet. Now, we had been talking about this, and this was what I thought was so perfect. Because sometimes in manifestation, you knew exactly what you wanted.
Right.
And you've been looking for a long, long time. I'm talking off and on for a couple of years.
Yes.
So you knew exactly what you wanted,
mm-hmm.
and the price you wanted to pay for it, because
mm-hmm.
you knew that was fair. And
mm-hmm.
we believe, it's just our philosophy, if we're going to buy something, it has to be worth more to somebody else. So if we wanted to sell it, we'd make money. That's just the way we think.
That's just how we work.
That's how we roll. Everything's an asset, right?
Right.
But what was interesting is that 2 weeks before, you were showing Dad and I some different campers that were out there.
Mm-hmm.
And him and I were both like, well, this would work. This would work.
Mm-hmm.
But we hadn't been looking. And you said, well, I know it would work, but it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when the one, your exact words were, the perfect one will show up, and I'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, we'll trust that.
Mm-hmm.
But Dad
and Norm was kind of pressuring me, too.
Oh, he was, because there was one that was close enough.
Yeah.
Was close enough. And then I got the phone call saying, hey, I just bought a camper to New Jersey.
And you went, New Jersey. And then I said to you, how am I going to get it here? And you went,
you're not.
Have it shipped.
You're not
you
driving
solved,
to New Jersey.
You solved that part of the puzzle, because I was like, Do we have to drive out to New Jersey? That's a long drive.
Yes. No.
And you went, no. And explain how serendipity,
well,
how
I'll
synchronistic.
Tell you what, you gave me a problem. I solved it less than 10 minutes.
Oh, you sure did.
I'm going to call my book, Solve Any Problem in 1 Minute.
That's right.
Or at least solve this problem. I solved this problem in 1 minute.
That's right.
And then it took 9 minutes for you to get it all together and organize it.
You did. You just said, have it shipped, Mom.
Yeah. And you're like, well, how do I do that? I go back on to eBay, and there's probably a button there that says, how much would it cost to have it shipped?
Yeah.
And you did. And literally within 10 minutes, so Tina's book is totally right,
yes.
The 10-minute solution, you got a quote. And the quote was less than the gas it would have cost you to drive out there and back.
Oh, way, way less.
And I
way
said,
less.
There you go. And that's when you knew it was
and,
all
well, and
the
it was
thing.
What was interesting is within 24 hours we were talking to the guy that was taking the, you know, and he said, I stay around New Jersey, New York. I never go, you know, west or Midwest. He said, but I had a friend that needed this trailer pulled from Davenport, Iowa, which is literally about an hour and 10 minutes from our house.
Right.
And he said, I saw this, and I really, he goes, I just was just happen chance
mm-hmm.
how this happened. And I loved the way it all came together.
I do too.
Loved the way it
and
all
I,
came together.
There were some hassles. He had a breakdown and all that stuff. But the truth is, none of those hassles were anything major.
But it, and not only that, it was him that had the breakdown.
Yeah, not us.
Not us.
No, and I just went, it's all okay. And everybody got great feedback on everything, and it was perfect. Can I say
something about the camper?
Yes, you may.
Just for, does it look like it's ever been used?
No, it doesn't.
I know.
Not on the inside, that's
I know.
For sure. You know?
I just think that's so cool. I mean, I literally wanted...
It was
wanted...
literally, you said, this camper was bought by them for us.
I did say that.
And I'm like, yeah, hallelujah, praise the Lord.
And the guy's a therapist?
Yes. I just thought it was a wonderful situation.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if you wanted to share it with anybody yet.
No, but I what did the guy on the A-team said all the time? He was like, I love it when a plan comes together.
And it did.
And it did.
And this is when you know that sometimes the seeds you plant, I mean, this was several years in the making, the mm-hmm. seed. You just don't know how it happens, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
things click.
Things align.
Yes.
You know, when the moon is in the seventh house, and Jupiter aligns with Mars, and peace with God, you know, that's when it happens,
stuff.
Baby.
Exactly. So before we end the night, can I talk a little bit about football? I was going to share a bullying story or a childhood story with you.
A bowling?
Bullying.
Oh, bullying.
And I apologize, everyone.
I know.
I have a cold, and you know, I...
Cold number two.
And since we've been on this BBS radio again,
yeah.
And I do feel a little frustrated with it.
I would say that, you know, if you were like in high school, I'd say you have mono or something.
Yes. But I don't. It's just a cold. I'm not in high school anymore.
Sorry.
I mean, I do kiss a lot of people. Maybe I do have mono. I don't know. But I am getting a little old of it. Maybe I have a coming chronic. I don't know.
Yeah. Don't even go there, girlfriend.
I know. I don't want to believe it. I don't want to put it out there.
No.
But I found myself today, you know, sucking up snot, whatever. But
I heard it a little bit.
I know. I tried, but I couldn't keep it secret.
It's good radio, though.
Sure it is.
It's good radio.
Exactly. They're like, oh, geez, Julie's sick again. When's that girl? What's wrong with that girl? And then I'm like, yeah, I should be taking my probiotics. I'll be my immune products. And
but you take that one little gummy bear a day, you think it's going to do all of that for you. Fred Flintstone.
Well, that gummy bear, though, yes, it's gummy bear, but it is all whole foods.
Yes, it's true.
And it tastes like it. I mean, I don't know how they make it.
It tastes
but,
like grass.
Oh,
and
really
not the good kind of grass.
Yeah, take away the GR. That's what it really takes a little taste
oh,
like.
Oh, no. I agree, but I have found that mango tastes like the ASS.
Yeah.
Like when you have a mango jelly bean.
There's just some flavors that should never be a jelly bean.
Some flavors should never make it to jelly bean.
And I think mango is probably one of them.
Yes.
Yeah. I think... green smoothies, might be one. Nutribullet green smoothies.
Because from the Midwest, anything with kale, it's not bad. We're getting used to it.
Exactly.
You put enough blueberries and bananas in there. Right?
Exactly. You put enough sugar stuff in there, it takes care of it all.
Yeah.
And that pineapple and banana really helps.
That helps the kale.
Exactly. But so here's my football tale, because we're in the middle of football season, real quick. And I got served today in the sense that, well, first of all, my team is losing really badly,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine, you know. But the Bears are losing. They lost the game today, and they lost. And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the game already, sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Well, they lost. And
it's 50-50.
Right. And then I went out third quarter to get Doug some candy because he had a candy fix. And I'm like, I'll go. Because you're just being kind of creepy anyway because they're losing.
He's
and
being kind of mango-esque.
Yeah, exactly.
He's in a mango hole.
Exactly. And so I walk out, and there's a We were at actually his daughter's new house, and there's a gentleman next door neighbor, and I said hi, and he's in the late 20s, and he goes, and I go, oh, he's outside working on his car. I go, oh, are you frustrated with the Bear game too, and that's why you're working on your car because it's still playing? And he goes, Bears game. And I'm like, oh, no, because now I've got a conversation with this guy I didn't really want to have. All I really wanted was from him was a yes response.
Yeah, you wanted an affirmation.
I wanted just like, oh, yeah, that, those Bears,
The Bears.
Yeah, and then we can all move on. We had something in common, but now I'm actually having to engage in him because now I feel like a fool. So he's like, I go, the Bears? I'm like, yeah, the Bears football team, they're playing right now. And I thought since they were losing, you decided not to watch the game and come out here and work on your car. And he goes, they're losing? I'm like, oh, my God. I don't mean to surprise you with it, but they're losing. They're going to lose the game.
Uh-uh.
And he goes, who are they playing? I'm like, I go, Miami. And so I'm realizing I'm having this long conversation, and all I really want to do is go run to the gas station, buy Doug a candy bar, and come back.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny because here we are having this conversation, and it's, first of all, it's uncomfortable for me because I would have just said, hey, beautiful day, huh?
Right, right.
Then we would have connected, would have had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
We would have been happy, but here we are having this actual conversation where he has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I can't even, I mean, I don't even know where he, you know, I'm just seeing this in my mind's eye. I can't figure out, I'm just thinking, the Bears?
The Bears?
Yeah, they're losing? Who are they playing? I can't even imagine, because literally our town, literally stops.
Yeah. Well, and if it was the Bears-Packer game, it would have been totally stopped because we got just as many Packer fans right now.
Right.
It seems like.
It does.
Well,
not
as many, but maybe 30% of Packer fans hanging around. However,
sometimes I see us moving to Green Bay just to become Packer fans.
I do not see us moving to Green Bay to become Packer fans.
You don't? That's not a seed that you want to have planted.
Take that seed out, crush it, make it into your salad, and eat that seed. Don't let it plant anywhere.
The colors are kind of pretty, the green and gold.
Yes, this is true. But it was kind of funny today because near the end of the game, there's a little tussle on the field. And I was with, three other people, and I go, oh, no, no. I go, there's three dolphins fighting one bear. I thought that was hysterical. But that's what was happening. There were three dolphins fighting one bear.
Oh, my God.
But it was kind of funny that I said that.
That was, okay, kudos to you. That was pretty funny.
So that was my football joke, but I'm bummed. I unexpectedly said, and off the cuff said, oh, no, there's three dolphins beating up on one bear. And that was kind of funny because in reality, you would never see that in nature.
No, you wouldn't. But I have to tell you, when we were coming home, Norm and I, from the park, mm-hmm. we turned into our complex, and we're driving down the street, and we see this bird, just a big bird, comes right up in front of our windshield, and he's carrying like a small snake in his mouth. And we're like, wow, it was like a pretty amazing nature. And so we turn the corner, and right there's a fox with a little bitty rabbit in his mouth. And he wasn't afraid of us. He was just like,
hey, look at me.
Yeah.
I got me a rabbit.
I'm sitting here in the middle of the street, and I got a little rabbit, which was kind of sad.
I know. But they got to eat, too.
That's what Daddy said. He said, circle of life, Chrissy, circle of life. I'm like, why does it have to be so cruel?
Well, I wonder, though, if our little niece, your granddaughter, because she loves foxes.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, there's a fox. I wonder if she goes, oh, no, there's a fox and a bunny. I wonder what she would connect with.
I don't know.
The fox and the bunny.
I don't know.
Luckily, we didn't have to have that discussion.
No.
That was a discussion.
Because everything for her is, like, about Frozen.
Yes.
So if the fox was frozen, maybe, I don't know.
Maybe it was cold out, winter out.
No, but it was a pretty magnificent sight.
I bet.
Overall, I mean, this fox was beautiful. It was red, reddish orange, and had this like beautiful tail, and it just looked healthy, and a couple of days ago we had about 11 turkeys in our front yard, about maybe 5 deer, and one was a buck.
Mm-hmm.
A huge amount of squirrels.
Yes.
And I'm sitting here thinking, this. I live in magnificence, and then I hear inside my bedroom,
oh, that's right.
I'm like, what the heck is that? And I look up, I see this little chipmunk inside the house.
Oh, my God.
And I start screaming, Norm, Norm. And he didn't hurt it. He took it outside, thank God.
Why don't you tell the whole story about that before we hang up? Because it's a pretty funny story.
No, you tell the story real quick.
Okay, well, luckily I was not home, because this would not have happened if I was home.
No, it wouldn't have happened.
So, because for whatever reason, when I'm not home, my parents don't wear much clothes. I don't know why.
It's true.
But when I'm home, gratefully, you're mostly clothed.
Yes.
Thank you. And so somehow...
You're welcome. You're welcome.
So somehow, the whole story is this, and I know it to be true, because I just know this is my true. So it goes, Dad scares a chipmunk into the far part of the house into the small bath.
Right.
And then he traps him with tubs, basically those plastic tubs for storage.
Right.
And... I guess at this time he just comes out of the shower wearing nothing but a longer top, possibly.
T-shirt.
So he's not yet dressed.
No. I said to him, I'm screaming about the chipmunk, and I said, would you like to put pants on before you try to get the chipmunk out of the house?
What
and
was,
he said, no.
I have no time.
No.
There's no time for pants.
No. I'm saving the world.
And sometimes there's no time for pants.
That's right.
Okay. So then he runs, I guess, and he ends up getting a chipmunk into the tub.
The tub, that's right.
And this chipmunk's going crazy.
And he's trying to get out of the tub, obviously.
And the way the story goes is to get that from not happening, he has to shake the tub lightly to keep him off his feet.
Right.
He's shaking the tub. He just has his top on.
And he
hits the garage
hits
button.
The garage door button. He runs out of the garage
and
onto our driveway
with no pants on.
No pants on. Just a top, shaking this tub.
And only by the grace
chipmunk.
Of God was there nobody.
Amazing grace.
Yes, thank you for everybody else. Because it would be not unlikely to have a dog walker walk by.
100%.
So we were very lucky.
Yes.
I think, I don't know what he would have done.
And the chipmunk lived.
The chipmunk
happily
lived.
Ever after.
So, you know what? Win all the way around.
Life is good.
Life is good. Win all the way around.
That's right.
So
win-win.
Win-win-win-win. Thank you, God.
It was great, Joe.
It was great. Everyone have a great, great night. Thank you for being a part of Life with the Girlfriends tonight. You can go visit us at ChristyMarieAndJulie.com or Life with the Girlfriends.
And buy The Clutterfly Effect at Amazon.com.
Bye-bye. And it was great, huh, girlfriend?
Mm-hmm. It was great. It was great.